kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole. Cole, how are you doing?
It's not as usual. I'm not usually on Wednesday shows.
You've been on a bunch of them lately with interviews.
True. That's a good point.
So it's kind of like usual.
I'm not usually doing a review on a Wednesday show.
Very true. But you're here because, you know, obviously we have reviews to take care of. Mm-hmm. Purnell and Chris are going to be here a little later on in the show. But, figured we'd start off with a big one, huh?
No, this is just a little tiny indie we're doing. This was like a $5 game, right?
Yeah, just a little off the mark. Should we dive into the review or did you want to chit-chat for a bit?
No, we can go on because I'm going to have a lot to say.
A lot?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. But before we dive in, I do want to take a minute. I know we cover wrestling on the show every now and then. Well wishes to Roman Reigns, who on Raw tonight, as we're recording, came out and revealed that he's leaving to fight leukemia. So, oh, wow. Butt cancer, kick its ass, and hopefully I get to boo you again soon.
Yeah.
Shit gets heavy sometimes. That threw my night off so badly.
Yeah, it's hard to follow up with something like that, because my sister has dealt with blood cancer, so I'm a little sensitive to it, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so even just hearing it sends shivers down my spine. Like, I don't even want to think of going back and seeing her go through that again. And it breaks my heart to know that other people go through that same experience, that it's as rampant as it is.
Yeah, there were rumors that he had some kind of injury he was dealing with. Nobody expected this.
Something like that, yeah. And that's one of those things, is that something like that, it comes out of nowhere without any kind of real warning or anything. When my sister was diagnosed, she had a sinus infection. She'd been going to the doctor for 2 months trying to get a sinus infection cleared up. And then it was, you have a sinus infection, you have bronchitis, you have pneumonia. Oh, no, never mind. You have cancer. Oh, you know, Jesus. And it spirals out of control very quickly when it comes to something like a blood cancer. You know, my sister was lucky. She caught it extremely early, and she's been in remission for 2.5 years now. So they technically consider her cured. But, you know, it's a long and harrowing road. And whether you go through it for 6 months or 6 years, it fucking sucks.
Yeah. So best wishes to him. Hopefully he can fight this and get back to being booed like the bad Indeed. Guy he is. I say the bad guy he is, like he's not supposed to be the biggest baby face in the company.
Yeah.
Everyone just hates his character. So that's, hooray.
I mean, there's always somebody that's got to be the bad guy.
Yeah, but it's not supposed to be the good guy.
It's true. Good point.
Anyway, speaking of dicks.
Speaking of dicks.
First game to talk about tonight, Call of Duty Black Ops 4, developed by Treyarch, published by Activision, released October 12th on Xbox One and PS4 and Battle.net for PC for $59.99. Black Ops is back, featuring gritty, grounded, fluid multiplayer combat, the biggest zombies offering ever, with 3 full undead adventures at launch, and Blackout, where the universe of Black Ops come to life in one massive battle royale experience. Cole, tell us about Black Ops 4.
What a lovely little indie game, man.
No. It's an upstart. I have a good feeling about this indie.
Yeah, I think it's going places. We might see a few of these. I'm sorry. It was just an easy joke to make, and I needed an easy one today. Black Ops 4 is obviously the fourth installment in the Black Ops series.
No.
But there's been... No! Seriously. But there's a lot of changes this time around. We do see a lot of the same characters make a return for Black Ops 4 that we saw in Black Ops 3, which is welcome. There was one missing. I'll get to it in a minute. I'm still mad about it. But for the ones that are there, there is one downside. And it's the elephant in the room that everybody has to address when it comes to a Black Ops 4 review, and that's the lack of a campaign.
Yeah.
We spoke about this when they made the news that there was not gonna be a campaign. And the whole process went everybody like World War II because it was boots on the ground, and the Black Ops series had very, very heavily skewed toward super futuristic gameplay. Which is kind of funny given that the first Black Ops took place like during Vietnam. So, and then somehow we have cyborgs by Black Ops 3, and nobody really knows how that shit happened.
Magic.
I played all three campaigns and I still sit at the end and go, what? But there is no campaign because it had gotten to the point where it was so futuristic that Activision stepped in and was like, you guys got to cut that shit out. We got to take it back somehow. Treyarch decided that there wasn't any way to scale it back and just scrapped the campaign completely. And that's how we ended up with blackout mode, basically. There is a specialist HQ, which kind of serves as your campaign point. So there are 10 characters that you can play as in Black Ops. For multiplayer purposes. And rather than having one cohesive campaign where we meet all these characters and possibly go through their experiences like you would in a traditional Call of Duty campaign, we play instead as these little, there are small backstory cutscenes that we see.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll give you some details about, you know, who the character was, their life before they became cyborg, you know, mercenaries, and basically how they got to be part of Black Ops. But it's not a cohesive thing. It's just broken up through each different character having their own campaign, and then, or not campaign, but,
just their own little mission.
Little cutscene. And then you play through the mission. It basically serves as a tutorial to teach you how to play as that character in a multiplayer scenario. For example, if you're playing with Battery, it will guide you through, this is how you use her war machine. This is how you use her cluster grenades. This is when they're good. This is when they suck. You know, this is how you don't drown like a jackass. You know, very basic, minor things to learn. And then it'll put you in, say, a domination scenario. It's like, this is how you play domination without getting your ass wrecked. The bots are idiots, and it's not at all like playing in real life with,
oh God, no, with not
multiplayer
at all.
People who will just wreck your ass no matter what you're doing.
I'm proof of that.
You know, though, Joe, you did incredibly well at Blackout. I'm so proud. You sucked the first two. But that third one, the third try was the charm. And like somehow you did things and you outlived me and you had 5 kills and you were like, what was it? Top.
I was number five.
Five. So, I mean, that's for your third game in duos. That's really fucking impressive. And I'm so proud of you, Joe. We're going to do this again. We're going to get that number one.
You're going to get that number one. I'm going to piggyback.
Maybe, but it's okay. Or at least I will guide you to the number one, which was what I was doing when you got so far the first time. Sit in that corner. Don't fucking move.
Instead, I just dive through windows constantly.
Makes me so nervous.
I can't help it. It's so fun to do.
It is. And I do the same thing in PUBG. And then, like, whoever's playing with me is like, windows, who broke a window? Who opened that door? And I'm just sitting there going, like, I wanted to explore. And I did the same thing in Blackout. I'm decidedly not as bad in Blackout as I am in PUBG, because in PUBG, no fucking window is safe. But in Blackout, people can hear you a little better. Which brings me to my first point of that specific mode, is that I find it's far easier to play than a lot of other battle royales. Hear me out, because I know if anybody like plays battle royale games hardcore And they're like, but I've got like 50 wins already. Sorry, dude, you got it because it was easy. And I say that even though I still haven't won one yet, because I always play duos and I've never won a duos in any battle royale ever. But it's far easier to play, because once you pick up any backpack or any armor, you're instantly at an advantage. All the weapons are really well balanced, so you could shoot somebody across the map with an SMG just as easily as you could a sniper rifle. That probably needs fixed a little, though. The drop-off could use some adjustments, but as far as like going head-to-head, no matter what kind of weapon you've got, you stand a valid chance. You did mention in the summary, I think, where they basically took maps from classic Call of Duties and piece them together to create the Battle Royale map, which is really, really cool. Some of the first few times that we dropped into it, it was really neat to fall into these larger areas. You know you're going to die because you went somewhere named, and that's just the way Battle Royale works. But you still want to go because you're like, oh my God, firing range. I recognize that. And you're in it and you're like, I recognize this area. And you can still pinpoint the little things that they changed to make it more battle royale friendly. Even though you're like, no, I remember how to play this fucking map. And it's so cool to be in those areas. Factory is one. Array is another. I couldn't think of it there for a second. And it's just so incredibly, there's even zombies maps that have been pieced into these other maps from the classic Call of Duties. So it's so cool to see, you're like, oh, I recognize this from Transit or whatever. And it's just incredible. There is one odd addition to Blackout that other Battle Royale games just don't have right now.
What's that? That's
zombies. They kind of feel a little out of place. And a little excessive. I feel like if the zombies were a thing on their own, they would be kind of cool. But because there's still the plane that flies over and drops supply drops, then it's like, make up your mind. Well, can you just pick one, zombies or a supply drop?
Yeah.
Zombies would have been a neat shakeup, and they are cool in that, you know, once you destroy all the zombies, you get the mystery box that you would classically get in a zombies game. And you can pull a few different weapons and things out of that. The zombies will also drop med kits and level 3 armor and all kinds of cool stuff. I love the symbol monkeys are there. You just throw those bad boys and then some dumbass is going to be like, what's that? And then boom. And it's But, it does feel a little excessive that you're like, okay, well, there's zombies here and there's a supply drop there and, you know, other just random good shit laying around. Literally, if you make it to the final circle without at least level 2 stuff, that's your own damn fault. And that again escalates the whole, this is far easier than most other, battle royales, because it is so much easier to get good gear.
Yeah, it's just me as a noob, I didn't have a hard time actually finding gear or finding weapons. Mm-hmm. It just showers you with stuff.
And then to top it off, they have little boxes that are actually perks you can pick up. So you can have awareness where you hear enemy footsteps louder. You can have looter, which helps you see where even more shit is to pick up. And another thing that's actually easier in Black Ops as opposed to any others, you can heal on the go. In literally every other battle royale I've ever played, your ass has to sit down somewhere to use a med kit, which makes sense. But I guess super cyborg mercenary soldiers can stick a needle in their arm while they're running. Mm-hmm. Which is cool, I guess, because they totally do that shit. Again, though, I feel like they kind of went a little over the top in items here. Sometimes with Battle Royale, most times with Battle Royale, less is more. And so you have first aids, then you have med kits, then you've got trauma kits, then you've got, and it's just like, okay, we don't need all this. Just make first aid be a little more effective And then you don't need the med kit. Make med kits a little more effective and drop the first aid, because they only heal one bar of health anyway. Other than just making it easier for you to play, they really don't serve a whole lot of purpose. It's just more shit to clutter up your backpack with. That's a battle royale preference, though. Some people are going to be like, yeah, I got everything. I can heal for days. And other people don't give a fuck. So, yeah. For actual multiplayer, as I mentioned before, you have the 10 characters that you can play as. They all have their different backstories. Somewhere around the time that Overwatch got super popular with its different class character system, Activision was like, hey, that's a good idea. Let's do that too. And they built this in the multiplayer. And I actually don't like this system. And it's just a preference thing. There are people who love it. And that's fine. But I don't particularly care for being forced, like, pigeonholed into certain play styles. Like, I tend to be somebody who likes to approach the game with more situational awareness. So I like to be able to see where the enemy has traps placed at, or barricades and things of that nature, or where their equipment and sentry guns and UAVs are. But at the same time, I like to be less supportive. That's more for, like, keeping my ass alive.
Yeah.
And supporting me than supporting my teammates, which is really kind of horrible. But at the same time, I want to be able to see where their shit is, and I still want to be able to be a little bit stealthy, and I still want to be able to pack enough punch that if I get into a fight, I'm not fucked immediately. And I feel like the character class system kind of cuts away from that, especially when only one person is allowed to pick a character class per game. If you're not quick on the draw, and you're only really particularly good with a character or two as far as their special abilities and behaviors go, you're kind of SOL, and you can expect to have a bad KD just because you weren't able to play with a class that fits your play style. And Call of Duty, up until they started this a little while ago, was always about play your way. Set up your class the way you want. So this, you know, pigeonholing players into certain types of character classes kind of does away with that. They did fix it a little. A little. Because at least they brought back the pick 10 class system. Black Ops 3, if I remember correctly, was particularly bad in that certain classes were limited to certain weapon types. So you couldn't run Outrider with a suppressor and an assault rifle and dead silence. Like, you were limited to the type of character you had and what kind of abilities you could put together with them. There are still some limits to what you can do in Black Ops 3. For example, if you're running an assault rifle, you can't have a suppressor, which is just really weird. I don't understand that. Of all the guns to nerf and take away suppressors from, why assault rifles? But you can with an SMG and an LMG and a sniper rifle. So, I mean, there are other options, but for whatever reason, they've nerfed assault rifles in this way.
To
spite me, because I bitch about it every Call of Duty that they've done this. This is like, it's been a couple years that they took away suppressors for assault rifles. And I don't understand why, because I'm one of those people who Modern Warfare 3 days was like, give me an ACR and a suppressor and some sit rep and everybody's going to die.
I
was the kind of player who would get like 50 kills when the score only went to 75.
Oh, Jesus.
So, I mean, I had my set and it worked out well. And I've, not to say that I can't still play like that, because I did in Black Ops 3, but again, I used Outrider, and for whatever mysterious reason, they have ganked this character like she never existed. And this is my other complaint. Give me back Outrider, please. She was so cool. If you haven't played Black Ops and you're not familiar with who Outrider was, she was a recon character. And they've actually created a new character who's literally named Recon. And he has one of Outrider's abilities, but not her other one. The ability that they brought back for Recon is literally to like use a visor to cause all of the enemies on the map to light up red for so many seconds for your whole team. Which can be a really powerful ultimate, honestly.
Oh, yeah.
But in Black Ops 3, Outrider had a second ability, and her ability was to use a Sparrow, which was a bow and arrow, and the arrows exploded upon impact. I miss my Sparrow. I just really miss that thing. People would get so mad if you were legitimately good with it. Not to toot my own horn, but you could really
Your own horn anyway, aren't you?
You could piss people off, is what I'm trying to say. And I got some hate mail. But she was a hard character to use, and that may be one of the biggest reasons why they nixed her, was a lot of people weren't particularly skilled with her either. And so swapping her out for Recon may have kind of just balanced it and gave players who weren't good with the Sparrow a different option. Although it does, this isn't a major complaint, this is more of a minor thing that I noticed, it did lower the amount of female playable characters in the game. So there are 8 males, but only 2 females now.
Bastards.
I want to say there were, I know there were at least 3, obviously, because of Outrider, but I want to say there were 4 in Black Ops 3, and we do not have as many playable females now. Although, to be fair, one of them is Asian. So, hey, representation.
Yay.
But there is a... It's just a quirk for me. Because naturally, I like to be the female characters. And then if somebody's an asshole and already takes Battery and Seraph, then I'm like, well, what about me? Now I have to have a dick.
Speaking of dicks.
Speaking of dicks, I've gone off...
How about zombies?
Zombies! I can't believe I hadn't even touched on zombies beyond Blackout yet. Zombies in this one actually has 3 new maps to play. And that is pretty impressive. On top of having 3 new maps, they actually have difficulty settings now, which is weird. It's so nice to be able to go in and put it on casual and not get fucked up in round 5.
Yeah.
There's one of the maps is very obviously kind of based on like the Titanic. This is called Voyage of Despair. And so you have like these 1940s. Is it the 40s that Titanic was set in, or is it the 20s? It was the 20s, wasn't it?
I think so. I don't remember.
So like you have these, you know, old-fashioned dress zombies coming at you with like water pooling off of them because of the boat sinking. It's so incredible the details that they put into it. You do have to play a little more for the Easter egg. This was my complaint with Black Ops 3 too. It's not, I gotta quit using the word complaint. It's more like a thing I noticed that I'm like, eh. Rather than actually being pissed off to complain about it. But It's that, I think I mentioned this when you and I played. If you go back to Call of Duty Advanced Warfare, you had the option for an Easter egg where you could carry out certain tasks while you're killing the zombies and actually progress and escape. But it was optional. You could easily just sit and kill the zombies and make it to wave 60, 70, whatever you were skilled enough to keep up with, without even giving a damn about the Easter egg. You didn't have to put shit in any one place or another to get out if you didn't want to, or to get certain perks. It was just run in a circle and kill the zombies if that's what makes you happy. And I happen to be one of those people that likes to just run in a circle and kill the zombies. I don't mind to do the Easter egg once or twice just to see what it's about. And it seems like it started, again, Black Ops 2 in Transit, which was my least favorite zombies ever. they've continued this Black Ops 3 and again in Black Ops 4. You kind of have to get the Easter egg parts at some point, or you're going to hit a wall. Seems like when I played with you, we kind of hit it around 25.
Well, you did. But I
there was an extra problem.
We'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, so there was the extra problem where you went down, and I had set us up the option to have bots, which is weird. And I don't think you could do that before any other Call of Duty, since you could set up bots. I think it was just whoever was there, and that was all you had. And you can actually set bots up. The bots are better than us. And I am good at zombies, and so that was sad. But they're also handy as hell to have.
They are.
In the later levels. In the first levels, they're bullshit, because when you're trying to do the thing where you rack up a whole lot of points, they step in and, like, kill zombies, and you're like, no, I was going to punch it. Get the fuck out of here. It took me a few minutes to figure out why the fuck my zombies were dying after two shots. It was because the bots were putting in the other two. I was like, calm your tits, bots. But they do become handy in later rounds. If you eat shit, they'll come pick you up. Or if you get to a point where even all the humans are down, the bot can still carry you through the level and bring you back up, and you can keep going, which is interesting, because as far as I was always aware, with zombies, when you die, that's that. You start that shit over. So this is a good way, like, if you were on a good streak, you could keep going, especially if you had a lot of points built up. However, you went down.
We ran into, I'm hoping this is just an isolated glitch. Mm-hmm. It seemed odd where my character went down. I didn't know a computer was nearby me, so I tried doing the self-revive. Mm-hmm. And then they came over and started reviving me, and it just glitched out, and I stayed in the, what is it when the screen is red?
Last stand.
The last stand. I was stuck in last stand with my revive gauge all the way maxed out. I couldn't revive. No one could revive me. I was just stuck.
Yeah. And then what happened is when I finally died, I was spectating your screen, and where it was all red because you were in last stand. When I did come back, you did not revive at the start of the new round, correct?
Correct.
You were still down. I was actually revived because I was dead. But my screen kept that same last stand red. So I don't know if we just somehow managed to break the game, if there needs to be a quick little patch for that. I haven't recreated it in any other zombies games that I was playing. It was on Voyage of Despair. I've played on 9 without any issues. So I somehow we just broke it, which is what we do.
Yay!
So it's like I said, it wasn't the worst thing that could happen. I mean, I kept playing. You were just kind of stuck in spectator mode.
Yeah.
And you weren't even, like, a good spectator, because you could only see what was directly in front of you and look up and down.
Yeah, I couldn't even look left and right.
Yeah, so you were definitely stuck. But I don't think it was game-breaking to any kind of extent. Honestly, you went down early enough that I probably shouldn't have been a cunt about it. And I should have just ended the game and was started over.
That was fine.
I was in a position where we were trying to see if we could get the artifact and open all the doors. And once I already knew where it was, I was like, sorry, Joe, but you're just going to have to sit there while I go do this and see if I can.
Hey, you got me achievements, so I'm good.
Yeah, we got a couple of achievements, even though you ate shit, so it's fine. But it's... I think it's really creative that they have thrown in 3 maps for zombies. And it does, if you're a zombies fan, you know, and you were upset about the lack of a campaign, this is going to give you something extra to fill that time that you would have been playing campaign.
Yeah.
If you're not a zombies fan, though, it's probably not going to make you feel any better. And I wouldn't expect the specialist HQ to fill in the lack of a campaign either, because, like I said, they are really just training missions.
Yeah.
But the backstories are really interesting. And I do play most often as Battery. And her specialist HQ dossier video, like, I was all choked up. I had emotions. Because I played as Battery a lot in Black Ops 3 as well. So it was emotional to see the little callbacks. They did do some really neat work too with the dossier videos where they called back characters from Black Ops 2 and Black Ops 1. And there are certain things throughout the whole game that kind of call back to the series' campaigns, which kind of makes it a little sadder that there isn't a campaign, because one of the things about Call of Duty has always been, here's your campaign, here's your story. That's what the multiplayer levels are based off of. The multiplayer levels are usually redesigned areas from the campaign that you would recognize if you play the campaign.
Yeah.
And so playing through the multiplayer and playing through the Specialist HQ and, you know, playing in Blackout and the instances where, like, you're in the Storm Surge and you've got the random numbers. Anybody that's played Black Ops is going to recognize the random number codes that they all hail back to the brainwashing that happens in the first game. On one hand, you're like, wow, that's so neat that they brought that back. On the other, you're like, what were they going to do with that, though? You know? I wanted to know where they were going to take that story. Because Black Ops 3's ending is fucked up. And I really would have liked to have seen it continued. I think I would have been more forgiving of a futuristic campaign, as long as they did stick with I hate to use the term less mobile. It's not like you can't run your ass all over the place on the maps, but they eliminated a lot of the vertical scaling. You can't wall run or anything like that. There's no double jump. There is one character with a grappling gun, but really it just sets you up to be a free target. And I've killed so many dumbasses with that thing. So, you know, unless you're trying to get a calling card, maybe don't worry about playing with a grappling gun if I'm in your game. No. But I just would have liked to have seen how it was all going to come together.
Well, it's what could have been, I guess.
Yeah. In the meantime, I'll just watch the numbers flash and get a tear in my eye.
Anyway, it is our job to judge what is here, what is available. So let's recap the good stuff. There's a lot of content there. Mm-hmm. Lots of zombies to keep you busy. Blackout's a really cool new mode. Multiplayer is as fast and crazy it as always is. The bad, some glitchiness that we've run into, lack of a campaign. Am I missing anything?
No, give me Outrider back. We have to throw in, they took out Outrider.
Okay, negative. They don't have Outrider. But for what's there for $60 overall, what do you think of Call of Duty Black Ops 4?
I did still really enjoy it. I've played so fucking much of it. I've had a blast with my friends. I just really enjoy it, and I enjoy it even more than I enjoy Black Ops 3. And I see that I will probably stick to playing Black Ops 4 for a lot longer than I expected I was going to. So I give it a buy it.
Awesome. As someone who's more new to the series, the biggest sticking point with me is a lack of a campaign. Mm-hmm. I really wish that there was more there for someone who, you know, I'm not the greatest at multiplayer versus games, and so much of this game relies on multiplayer versus. I have zombies that I could really enjoy. I did have fun with Blackout. I know I'm not that good at shooters, and I wish that there was more that I could play at my own pace instead of being thrown into the fire with everybody else.
Yeah. One of the things, too, that kind of hurt was that Black Ops 3 was the first Call of Duty to make its campaign co-op. Additionally, you had the option to play as either a male or female character. You lost all that when they took the campaign out. So it was just like, you were making such good progress. What happened? you know, as far as the campaign goes, I mean, we know what happened, but at the same time, it's just like, what could have been?
Well, hopefully there's enough backlash at lack of a campaign that next year it comes back.
You know, I'm not sure. I think, Sledgehammer is responsible for next year's, because last year was World War II, and so that was Infinity Ward, This year was Black Ops 4, so that's Treyarch. Is it Treyarch or Treyarch? I never pronounce it right.
I always say Treyarch.
I think it's Treyarch.
I don't know. Either way.
So then it should be Sledgehammer next year. So maybe Sledgehammer will listen, and they tend to have a little more freedom. I mean, they got to put out Ghosts, so.
Yeah.
They can do anything.
Ghosts 2 next year.
You know, I think I've said it before, but when Infinite Warfare came out, like, I wasn't hyped up for it because I've always considered Ghosts to be the weakest Call of Duty campaign. Great multiplayer, but the campaign was just awful. And when Infinite Warfare was announced, I sat there after watching the trailer and I was like, the fuck, I would have took Ghost 2 over that. And I've still maintained that I look at this point, just go ahead and give me Ghost 2. I'm okay. I forgive you for that ending in Ghost if you just give me Ghost 2 and get it out of the way.
Oh, boy. Oh, man. Well, that is it with you. Thanks for coming on and checking out Call of Duty.
Thanks for letting me play a kick-ass game.
Well, thanks to Activision for letting us check out such a kick-ass game.
Yes, thanks to them, too.
Do you have any final thoughts before we move on to Purnell?
Speaking of dicks.
Speaking of dicks, Purnell Vaughn's here. Purnell, how are you doing?
I don't know. Like, apparently, I think you misconstrued my name. See, I know there are people that call me Dick, but that's usually a nickname for Richard. Purnell gets more of a P or Pern or Nell. Not so much the Dick part, though. So, understandable. Common mistake. But all is well. I'm doing good. How are you,
man? That's our running gag. Whenever we don't have anything to say, we just go with speaking of dicks.
Dick's a hazard.
It's a good segue for everything. Like, Cole left, and she said, speaking of dicks. So, speaking of dicks, Purnell's here. How are you doing?
But just, now you just revealed everything. The trick. But now everyone knows the secret trick.
Oh, everyone already knows the trick.
The trick is dicks.
It's always about dicks.
And hat.
So speaking of dicks, how was your weekend?
It wasn't bad, actually. I got to play some board games, which I always appreciate when in rare times that happens, because I have a stack of board games that is like reaching the freaking stars at this point that need to get utilized, because I keep wanting to buy games for a social circle I don't have. But I still think of the dream, like one day I want to just stumble into a bar and I'm going to fall and then this person's going to help me get up and I'm going to learn. I'm like, maybe like a piece of like a game board piece is going to fall on my pile. Like, oh, wow, you play, Magic and Scheherazade, the board game, too? Yes, I do. I love that game. You should come play with me and my friends. And it's like, boom, match made in heaven. Oh, by an accident.
And then you fall in love.
I won't go that far. Love doesn't exist, man. That's just a quasi-couple, or whatever they call it. A word I just made up. Point is, yeah.
I would agree, but my wife might kill me.
She would kill you. And honestly, you guys seem to get along well enough. I won't dissuade folks who managed to work the weird chemical imbalance that is the love system in humanity.
Yeah, it's she strange. Tolerates me.
It's mutual tolerance. That is love in a nutshell. Cohabitation, mutual tolerance.
Oh, boy. Anyway, we should probably talk about your games, huh?
Yes, indeedly.
Because you got three games to talk about tonight. The first one is called Cronus Arc, developed by Hitpoint, published by Kemco, released October 10th on Xbox One and Windows 10 for $14.99. The Cronus fragments are needed to prepare for the time rewinding, which only takes place once every 10 years. On their way to get the fragments, Loka and his teacher Teth are surrounded by a mysterious man named Jeppel and his gang. While Teth plays for time, Loka rushes out of the cave on his own to fetch reinforcements. He's successful, but Teth and Jeppel are nowhere to be found. Oh, shit. Purnell, what happens?
Well, I'm not going to tell you what happens because that's spoiler-roni, but I will say that it becomes quite the bit of the chase quest to get the whoa twist of the story as you're chasing down Jeppel and hoping to find info on Teth. But for as beautiful as the game is for fans of classic RPGs, if you are interested in seeking on this mission, be warned, because there are things that you will have to do that you ain't going to feel like doing. Let me get into the whole shebang about this game. So, it is basically a turn-based RPG. Graphics that are from, I want to say, like, Secret of Mana-esque level sprite graphics. in that you are essentially going across the world map, exploring dungeons, and progressing on your adventure to get the answers to your puzzle. Combat is an interesting little bubble. It's not bad at all. It's actually pretty traditional. You get an attack set up, you get skills, you get magic, all of which you learn as you level up your character. Magic is interesting in this game, though, to an extent, because while you do have normal magic, you can augment it. They gave it the dumb name of techniques. I don't know why they call them techniques, but the techniques in this game are equipable stones that are more akin to magic augmentation. So you might have a spell that can work with a variety of different lettered techniques, like it might be the G techniques or the P techniques or something like that. And initially you're like, what the heck are they talking about? And that just is the letter that starts with the technique names, like Ream or Ray Ream or whatever. And different techniques have different traits. So for example, you might get a technique that when you equip it, it allows a spell to affect multiple characters at once, whether it be enemies or foes. You might get one that boosts your attack power. And you might even, in some cases, get some cool things, like one where it lets you like do spells more than once in one turn. So it's kind of nifty that you can equip those things. You can equip two per character, generally, and that's pretty much how that works. You use those to augment your spells. Also, there is a sort of class change system that takes place later on in the game. What happens is once you get a certain item, which can either be found on the world map, limited amount, or you can actually earn them using the game's, collection system. I'll get to that in a little bit, actually. You can use this item once you hit level 30 and get to a certain location to change classes for characters. Classes are choose between four different classes, and each of those classes gives the character specific moves that they can learn on leveling up, and it also changes their base stats. However, it also resets them to level 1, so you're going to be grinding them back up to get to the point where they're actually viable characters, but it's not as bad as when they started initially at level 1. Downside to this, though, is that the game, I don't know how others might feel about this, but I feel as though this game does not do a good job of respecting your time. I know when it comes to RPGs, people might typically go, oh yeah, obviously there's going to be a general bit of grinding in every RPG, blah, blah, blah. And while that is true in some cases, I think the thing that makes or breaks a game's grind is if the grind itself ends up feeling like it's a lot of fun. For example, you might play an RPG where you're grinding for experience, but with the experience you get skill points and items and all these things which allow you to customize your characters, and the combat can be like fast and frantic or something. So essentially you just kind of, you're constantly feeling stimulated, even though you're kind of grinding out your dudes. Though in this game, the grind is very, I'd say bland, because you end up spending a lot of time on auto battle. Even as the game gets a little bit more difficult, you'll start using like your abilities and stuff, but essentially you'll turn off auto battle and just do ability, heal, ability, whatever. And you're just grinding out because all the quests in the game, which you can take from guilds, typically revolve around kill 10 of these guys or kill 20 of these guys. Account, mind you, that unless you are running in circles, you might never even hit in an area because you won't be there long enough to fight that many guys. So it's not even like a natural gain of or increase of kills. Like your kill count goes up naturally. No, you're going to be running in circles to kill 20 black Choco ponchos or whatever. Which, by the way, game company, you overuse those damn ponchos. There's like two new ponchos in every freaking area. They're like the slimes of the game. There's like two of them in every area. And then there's like the multicolored wolves and multicolored birds. It's like early sprite palette swaps. Again, that's another RPG staple, which I'm not saying that shouldn't exist, but usually a game waits a couple hours before saying, well, you fought the imp, now here's the troll. It's the imp, but he's red. Like, now in this game, it's more like 2 hours later, oh, it's the same dude, but he has a slightly colored, different color palette. Anyway, I'm rambling on that component. A little. But as far as what I meant earlier about the being able to buy them through the, I guess, like the acquisition system or the accumulation system or whatever, this game has a shop in it which allows you to purchase things using mana. Mana is gained by converting the amount of enemies you've killed to mana. So, for example, if you trade, I think it was like kill 200 enemies, you get 40 mana. I'm pretty sure that's what it was. And then the highest is like 500 enemies to like 100 or something, which, by the way, even though they have, it goes up in increments, there is no deal or bargain. You're not getting more for killing more. It's just you're doing it in a larger quantity. That's all. Yeah. So don't think you're getting a real deal or anything. But you can use the kill converted mana to buy things like equipment, which, for the record, just like in the last, I think, Tamco game I reviewed, they had increase your experience by 100 items. And, of course, I bought those because why not? I mean, again, if I'm dealing with, like, grind time, at least that's one way to cut it down a bit. So yeah. I went ahead and bought those. And there's other items, including the item that lets you change your classes with the right person. And there's, like, other items that we're going to go into, like the crafting system, which, oh, this game has a crafting system. So how does crafting work in this game? And there's another positive that leads to a negative, unfortunately. In this game, equipment is primarily upgraded into. So you'll start with an item, and as you get materials, you can go to the blacksmith and have him boost your weapon. And each time you boost it, the stats will increase on the weapon or the armor. And when you reach a certain plateau, you can convert to a different weapon. However, you can only do those conversions once you find a guy on the, he shows up on like every world map or every location on the map, and he gives you something called boost manuals. And these boost manuals are what determine what you can eventually make from the blacksmith crafting. Miss one of them means you'll miss out on a couple of the items that you can get. This doesn't sound bad, right? No, it actually seems pretty cool to me, except for one thing. Kind of like how you're running around in circles fighting 20 Blocko Choco Punkos or whatever. You're going to be doing the same thing in this freaking game too, because you might need a certain count of, like, say, green feathers to upgrade a character's weapon so you can get their cooler version of their, you know, their good weapon. But you seem to be completely incapable of getting that green feather, whether because you have no idea where to find the green feather, because there's no, like, real index to the game that tells you what monsters have what, or, quite frankly, you just don't know what, you know, loot zone to collect it from. Loot zone, yeah, that exists in this game too. Every time, every once in a while, you'll be like in an area of the map and you'll find like a little sparkling spot where if you click it a couple of times, you'll get items from it. And it's completely random with a certain type of set of item types in one area, and then you have to leave and come back if you want to loot it again. So that will be another time consumer of you leaving areas, coming back to them, looting location spots, hoping to get the items you need to upgrade your weapons to move the heck on. Yes, eventually you will be able to buy other weapons in the event that you somehow miss the boat on the upgrade path, but it will likely be the lower tier weapon in the growth system. So, yeah, it's like a bit to keep you from completely being felt like you're left behind, but you're also, so it's not quite Final Fantasy VIII level, need to grind it out, but it's still enough that it becomes a bit of an irksome point. But as far as the game as a whole goes, it is a pretty game. The plot, it's, I've had this chat with you before, but playing these games, it genuinely starts to make me want to go back and play some of the older games like Lufia 1 or 2 and see if the plots are as rail thin as this is. Because I feel like they have, in some creepy way, encapsulated 16-bit RPGs and boiled it down to the very cores of what they were, which should be great. But I find myself going, I'm not really, really into this, but it's ticking the box that I'm still running in circles, beating dudes up, and I don't know what's going on with me. And it's scary, because it makes me question the hobby as a whole. Like, was I really enjoying these games, or was I just kind of monkeying through them? But then you'll name, like, Final Fantasy VI, like, oh, no, that game's a masterpiece. Kiss my ass. But, and that's where I feel slightly conflicted, like, I don't want to say deny it, but this is probably, this is a try it with a hearty lean towards the deny side of the spectrum because of all the things that I feel they kind of did wrong. But I feel like if you're really into this to the point where you're okay with everything I just said, as in, you know, just running around till you kill 20 black Pocopunkos and then 10 Draco Greenbows and all that stuff, like a light reward or whatever, and you can do it again. I mean, in that case, you can tick the boxes. Heck, I actually went out there and looked around. There are people that are, like, into these games. Like, they love them.
I love the Kemco games. I've had fun with a bunch of them. This one, I agree. It just has too much of a grind to it. And normally, I wouldn't mind, but this game has a shortcut DLC available. Like, you could spend $5 and get experience times 3. Or you could spend $4, and after every battle, your character's hit points are regenerated. Like, this is stuff I feel should have just been in the game. They've had DLC like this before for Chemco games. I know the last one we covered had the same DLC available for it. But the last game, I can't even remember the name of it. That one wasn't so overboard with the grind.
Yeah, and I feel like, and it's interesting, we had this chat earlier, I think, in regards to Assassin's Creed Odyssey, in that if a game is properly balanced to the point where you're enjoying the game, say, for example, Assassin's Creed Odyssey, just to use as an example, there are a bunch of quests in the game that are fairly diverse that lets you explore the world you're in and whatnot and engage with it. It makes you feel like you're enjoying the world. So if you're enjoying the game you bought, you'll eventually level up to where you get stronger and get stuff. But for people who just want that straight plot and want to just barrel through the game, they have this DLC there that you can purchase. And I generally, I'm like, you know, it doesn't hurt. There's no multiplayer, so it doesn't affect people. I'll let that slide because the balance is okay. Once the balance takes a dip, though, then you are clearly pushing people to buy a DLC to make the game feel like it's moving at a normal pace. That's a problem. And does this game do that? I feel like it teeters pretty close, because on one hand, I will say the DLCs you describe won't make those quests go any faster, per se. But once you have to get to the point where you're leveling up to get experience in general because you're getting your ass mopped by bosses, which does happen, well, yeah, that's when it gets a little bit more questionable.
Yeah.
So I'm not feeling so swell there. But I feel as though, I feel like I said, this is like a try it on the lower end of the scale, closer to deny.
Yeah.
But everyone that's listening has heard the complaints. And if those complaints don't matter to you, well, there you go, because it has the sprites, it has the traditional level up, get skills and magic, and it has the technique bumping system going on for it. It ticks all the boxes you'll probably like. It's just a matter of whether or not you want to deal with all the, again, things that don't genuinely respect your time so much components to get there.
It just comes down to how much you like the grind, pretty
and
much.
Also, one last thing, which is going to be weird, but this is just me. They give you this thing, the Cronus Fragments. That's the plot line that goes on with the game. And they explain what the Cronus Fragments do. I feel like they wasted an opportunity with those fragments. I feel like I was thinking I was going to start going to like dungeons where you walk in and you have to use Cronus Fragments to like warp time and stuff like that to get around and do nifty things. But instead, it's mostly just push this block to this puzzle.
Yeah.
Move this jar and put it on this switch. It's like you could have used the Cronus Fragments. It didn't have to be the Chase MacGuffin. It could have been an actual puzzle mechanic. It would have been awesome. Yeah. That's me.
Yeah, it's enjoyable, but it's not Chemco's best. That's how I feel.
And I would say if they have other games of this ilk, with this, like, say, this sprite style, I'd be cool with trying another one, but if it does the same thing, it would get the same scour from me, because like, I originally wanted the game because it was ticking, like this from the trailers, it was ticking all the boxes. I was like, oh man, the sprites are great. It's got puzzles in the dungeons. And I was thinking it was going to get more expansive. I was like, no, it's just set jar on switch and push block on switch every freaking time. But I'm sorry, sometimes it's a ring to break a rock. Whatever. But that's me.
Oh, well. Next game to talk about is called Eternum X, developed by Flynn's Arcade and Raiden Games, published by Zero Uno Games, releasing October 25th on the Switch for $10.99. Sir Arthur has gotten old, too old. He's lost everything he had and loved, and with nothing more to lose, he leaves for Samaranth, an evil subterranean kingdom which no knight has ever returned alive in search of treasures, adventures, most important, five magical orbs that together provide the eternal youth. Fernell, what is Eternum X?
Definitely was not what I was expecting it to be, but this isn't exactly a bad thing. So it is pretty clear from the graphic style to the even some of the music, one track in particular, that this game is definitely meant to be like a follow-up to Ghosts and Goblins, like an unofficial follow-up to Ghosts and Goblins, which is all right. It was all right with me, because again, that was a part of the appeal that made me want to look into this in the first place. And gameplay, though, is very unlike Ghosts and Goblins. The way this game works is that there are five quote-unquote kingdoms, and each kingdom has five stages in it. For each stage within the kingdom, you'll be on a closed map, and the goal is to collect all the treasure chests, which will then unlock the exit to the portal, and then you can get out of the level and move on to the next one. And the way that this works with treasures, like, there are all a bunch of sealed treasure chests on the map. As you collect them, you'll get, I guess, like a small point scale. However, in the event that you were to hit the chest from beneath, like Mario, you will eventually knock the chest open, which will not only increase the amount of points the treasure chest is worth, but it will also then make a random item spawn beneath it, which you can then collect. And the items range from like an electric lightning bolt, which lets you throw fireballs, to like exploding bombs that just send fire everywhere, to time extensions and other point, like little point items and stuff like that. But sometimes you'll find treasure chests that are locked, and then those you have to actually whack them from beneath just to unlock the chest. Then you can whack them some more to open them up and collect the booty. Whacking booty. There we go. Had to get that in there. It's a zigzag! And at the end of every stage, every fifth level, there is a boss encounter. And the boss encounter is designed where that you are jumping up a spire of sorts. And once you reach the top, you fight the boss. Usually it revolves around some kind of interesting little gimmick, or just whack the guy until he dies. And then once you beat the boss, you'll collect an orb, which is part of the five orbs to get the eternal youth potion or whatever. The game itself is definitely, it feels more like a classic-y arcade game, because it's more like, think of like how Bubble Bobble was, where it was like, hey, you're killing the enemies to proceed, but you're also trying to collect a bunch of fruit for a high score. Mm-hmm. This is a similar idea, where it's a finite level number of stages, and while you could just kind of marathon through it, and it gets challenging, but it's not, I don't think it's impossible, but there will be a bit of a challenge. This isn't a sleep-through game. But as you get to the end of the game, obviously you might be like, you know, I want that feel, I want that arcadey feel, I'm going for the highest scores. Means you're going to be trying to knock open as many chests with your dome as possible to get the full benefit of all the items, all within the time limit, and all while not getting your ass handed to you by the interesting array of monsters that they created for the game. Now, combat will be a bit challenging in this game, because Arthur fights with his cane, and his range with that cane is borderline non-existent. They got to be right in your face to connect, and some of the enemies can move fast enough that if you're slacking at the switch, you might get wicked. Because thankfully, the reaction time of the cane is pretty spot on. There's no lag for an old man, but if you're caught unawares, it really will be that fast and knock you off your keister. So you got to be mindful of that, not necessarily just try to kill everything. It's more about getting the loot and getting out of Dodge. Graphically, the game is fantastic. I love the sprites in this game. I love all the imagery that takes place in it. The music is decent. Nothing to write home about, mind you, but it's decent. But it also loops a lot. So I think each level generally has like three tracks for them that they reuse once for, I don't want to say like once per stage, but every level has five stages. You might hear two or three tracks, and then the boss jingle, so to speak. Mm. And it's not bad music, again. It's just, I don't think I'm going to listen to it off the game on like YouTube or Spotify or something. But as a whole, there's like, the game is divided into two modes too. It's the same game generally, but one mode is no progress saving, but you get, no progress being saved, but you get three continues. But you get no continues. And the other one is, I got it backwards. No progress is saved, but you get three continues. And the other one is progress is saved, but you get no continues. So I guess it unlocks the levels as you unlock them to try them again, but you can't continue. So it gives you both flavors. If you want to see how far you can get, you got that option. If you want to do I just want to play the levels as I unlock, as I see fit and try them, see if I can get better at them. They offer that to you too.
Nice. So overall, $11 on this one. What do you think of it?
I think if you're down with arcadey fun, it's a buy. Like I said, think about games like the Bubble Bobbles and the Flickies and the City Connections, that kind of arcade stuff, but with a Ghosts and Goblins flair, minus the crazy weapons that Arthur usually gets, because that's not here. That is not here, but it's still fun.
Nice. Sounds good.
Oh, thanks. I've been working this voice. I've been trying to get back. me. Hoping for, better things there.
I believe in you, Purnell.
I believe in you.
One last game for you to talk about is called Six Sides of the World, developed and published by Dolores Entertainment, released October 4th on the Switch for $10 even. All hail the puzzle lord. Six Sides of the World is a puzzle video game that takes you into an intergalactic journey through different star systems riddled with brain-racking challenges. Fernell, what is Six Sides of the World?
This is another case of a game that it's not what I expected, but not by much. But I came away feeling like I enjoyed it. So the idea is that you're on a bunch of, I guess, planetoids, but the planetoids are actually cubes, and each cube has different sides, and on each side there is an actual like little map that you got to run around on. The goal being that each stage is a cube, and you're trying to unlock the exit and then get to the exit. The exit is usually like a spherical portal, and the lock to it is usually like a colored crystal. And what ends up happening is you end up walking across one of the square sides. Let's say like just like a path on it, and there's a warp at the edge of the path. You step on the warp, and that warp will teleport you to another side of the cube. And there might be other switches there. There might be some dangers to dodge. Sometimes you might come across a switch that will activate something on another side of the cube, which will then result in you having to blitz to get to that side of the cube. It's funny because I feel like the challenge of this game, the majority of what makes it interesting is that it has an interesting form of spatial reasoning and remembrance that you have to get good at. So to go back to what I said earlier, and on your end, Joe, let me know if there's like something I need to elaborate on, because I'm going to do a ramble here. So let's say you're on one of the six sides of the cube, and you jump into a portal. The portal takes you to another side. Let's call it side two, and there are two portals there. One can take you to side four, one can take you to side six. You go to side six, there's a switch there that activates something on side one, and it's timed. So you have to remember to get back through the two portals, to get back to side one, to get through the gate that is being currently held down by a temporary switch, to proceed through the puzzle. Now, take things like that and make it much more complicated, because you'll come across scenarios where there's lasers spinning around the map, and you might have to hit like a series of buttons in a specific and deliberate order and timing to get the lasers to go down or reactivate at just the right time so you can get through them to get to the actual goal. Did that make any sense?
Yes.
Thank you, sir. I was worried for a second. In addition to like normal exits, sometimes you'll come across a level with a secret exit too. So it might be like, say, here's the crystal to unlock one portal, but if you go that extra mile to get this other crystal to unlock this other portal, you'll go to a secret world. The secret world has bonus levels on it, which are like pretty brutal on the challenge scale, which I think is pretty fun. A lot of times it's like very like reliant on like perfect runs of speed getting from one end of the puzzle to the other before all the lasers come in and like burn your face off. Other times the secret exit might just lead you to another map on the world that you're currently on, which is also okay, because if you're enjoying the puzzles, you're going to want to unlock all the worlds and do all the levels. Funny enough, there is like a story that's kind of playing out as you go through each portal. Like every time you finish a level, a quote will pop up. It's like, I feel like I've been here before. These weirdos are just fun and weird, but I like them. Like, I found myself feeling completely unconcerned with any of that. I genuinely just didn't care. Others might feel differently because it's kind of that small carrot to get you to the end of like a narrative. But to me, it was just about solving, cube puzzles, which is fine by me. That's what I signed up for. And I think they do a good job of messing with that and making you remember certain components of the stages in a way that I don't think a lot of puzzle games do.
Yeah.
Because it's one thing if you can see an entire map and know, I just push this button and I can see where the door opened up over there. I just got to get to it. But in a game where you hit a switch and it affected something that you can't even see somewhere else on the map, it's all about remembering where you've been and where you're coming from to try to remember the route to get back using portals and dip-de-doos or whatever. But overall, I was having a great time playing this game. It was very enjoyable, and it's a very unique type of platform. Well, I don't want to call it quite platform because you're not jumping or anything, but it's a unique type of puzzle that I'm not familiar with seeing for the most part. Which and in
it's,
a world
it's good when you get something unique and different these days.
Oh, yeah, especially in the puzzle genre, because between the mobile community and the Switch community and Steam, you damn near feel like everything's been done.
But yeah, I think everything has been done.
It's what it feels like. Yet this game is the case of, I think this comes up in the board game community a lot too, where it's like it's a game that is clearly using devices and mechanisms that have been in other games. Like this isn't like, they're not rewriting the book or anything, but it feels different in how they do it, which is enough, honestly.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Then $10 on it. What is your verdict?
I say buy this bitch.
Okay, then. I will.
just don't again, unfortunately, this is just a Parnell quirk, mind you, but just note that you're not going to be writing home about the music or anything. It's just there being noisy. But the game itself is fun enough that you won't care.
And I guess that makes you the puzzle lord?
Oh, it does. Oh, it does forever.
I bow to you, Sir Puzzle Lord.
Thank you. Now push this cube up this hill.
Oh, man. Purnell, it is always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts to wrap it up?
No, I'm surprisingly not introspective tonight. I'm not there. But keep playing those games. Keep having fun. Time is short. Use what you got to have fun with it. Just make the best of it.
All right. And finally, Chris Taylor's joining us. Chris, how are you doing?
Hey, doing great.
How was your weekend?
Pretty long. It's still going on, actually.
Is it?
Yeah, going on into Monday, because I'm between assignments at my temp place now, so gotta wait for them to get me something. Yeah,
on the bright side, more time for games.
Heck yeah.
What were you about to say before? Cutting you off. Oh my god, I'm such a dick. Oh my god, what were you about to say?
I don't remember. We've been doing podcasts for years together.
I'm just stepping all over you tonight.
It's all good.
Should we just talk about games?
Sure. That's what I was going to say, is that I did indeed play a lot of games.
And you're going to talk about three of them. Sound good?
Yeah. Three of them is exactly the amount I played that are relevant to this podcast.
Oh, man. All right. First game for you to talk about tonight is called Zarvot, developed and published by Snow Hydra Games, released October 18th on the Switch for $19.99. This is a game of cubes, tiny, adorable cubes with hopes, dreams, unrequited loves, and unlimited destructive power, where cubes find love, shoot lasers, and lay waste to handcrafted arenas. Chris, what the hell is Zarvot? Because it sounds insane.
Yeah, I was going to say the description, I don't know. I mean, it's more or less accurate. I don't understand what they mean by handcrafted. Pretty sure they still use computer codes and programs nowadays still. Oh my god, my cell phone immediately goes off. Nice. 5 seconds into my first review. Be quiet, cell phone. Silence. All right. Zarvot, yes. So, did I say that right, Zarvot?
Probably, that's how I say it.
My roommate was like, oh, hey, what's this? It looks interesting. And I blurted out that it was Zardoz. And I was like, wait, no, that's the bad Sean Connery sci-fi film. With this is much better than that.
That is very good to hear.
Yeah, yeah. So, this is a game, as it says, it's a game about cubes. Now, the thing is that I've been playing indie games on the Switch excessively for a long time now. Dare I say, I probably have too many, but I don't wish to curb the deluge or anything like that. I'm just saying, I've played many games about cubes. Don't mean to brag. I've seen many games about cubes that I have yet to play. There are so many of them. Cubes are a very popular item to make games about, probably because they're very simple to make. Therefore, I was ill-prepared for exactly how well-made this game is, because I was thinking, okay, cubes, so it's just, you know, lazy design decision so that they can just get down to some gameplay that's probably going to be really good, but, you know, they just don't have a design department or something, you know, like that sort of thing. I felt that way about some games before. However, This game actually harkens a little bit more to the distant past, all the way back to the year, I want to say 2005, something like that, where the game on the GameCube called Cubivore, which, which is one of the most expensive games to try and obtain for the Wii nowadays, the GameCube nowadays, but we'll not talk about that. It was a game that starred, you know, cubic characters. However, it was actually this this deep and melancholy sort of tale of growth and evolution, and it just like told this interesting story through the abstract, and the actual gameplay was very deep, et cetera, et cetera. It's like it used the cubist art to tell its story, but you know the cubes weren't really, you know, it was just a design choice. It wasn't just a means to an end. And that's the way I felt about this. So you've got, the game is actually, it does have a fully fleshed out story. It stars a bluish cube. This is one of those where people might argue over the bluishness or purplishness of it. But his name is Charcoal, which is, that's even more confusing, I guess. And, it's about Charcoal and his over hyperactive, like extremely charming yellow cube friend named Mustard, who is one of my favorite characters I think I've come across in recent times. He's a very, very bouncy character. Like the cube literally just bounces in place and stuff. And when he speaks in like misspelled words and like, you know, bad grammar and things like that. Like it's a, like an excitable internet meme type voice.
Oh God.
Think like Undertale, especially Temmie. If anybody Undertale fans out there get it, but anyways, so these two, decide that they need to get this ultimate, birthday present for their friend Red, who is another cube. And they have this, this whole set of items. And then they only need one more, which is an organic banana. It's like these items that they got in this present, they're all in like this suitcase with like form fitted like pieces and such, which comes into play later. But it's like crayons and a mochi ice cream and like a banana. It's like just these things, but apparently they all combine to form the ultimate birthday present. And, so the game kind of deals with, you know, events happen and you end up having to regain all of these items, and that seems to be the point of the game. Meanwhile, the game also deals with like depression and like flashback memories that are playable levels between Charcoal and Red, and like you get to learn about the complexity of these characters and their friendships, and ultimately it is a game about friendship. So it was really interesting in that way. And then the actual gameplay is kind of like a twin stick shooter. You know, one stick does move you around, but you don't use the other stick to fire. You use the face button. Actually, most of the buttons do something weapon-like. But it is just like rolling around a field of play and, you know, shooting at enemies as they appear. Glassists is actually the official title. It's just other enemies that are made of cubes, and you know, you can fire your laser at them, you can hold down the shoulder button and charge a super beam at them, you can push the X button and turn into a spiky like shield that helps defend against them. Like everything has its own little function and works really well against certain enemies. And so you get like this wide arsenal and you get to use it really creatively. And the cool thing is that you know, the game rates you on how well you do your combat at the end of the stage, which is, you know, you can beat your own scores and such. And they say that the game is meant to be played like competitively. That is to say, they made sure that the controls were tight enough and everything was lined up well enough that people actually want to try and be the best at this game. So it's nice that they put that out there. But yeah, so the other thing that sets this game apart, besides that it has a good story and, you know, really excellent action, is that so you've got your simple, you know, no nonsense cubes that, again, all they do is like wobble a bit. Like that's the extent of their animation. They don't have much complexity to them. And, you know, other characters are actually other things. This game seems to revel in the abstract. So, you know, occasionally a character might be a ladybug or, again, a banana. You actually have to fight a banana in this game, like a really realistic banana.
Nice.
Yeah. And that's the thing. is that the backgrounds in this game are super realistic, like a moving photograph.
Oh, wow.
Like, I don't know how they even did this. Like, it reminded me best, I would say, of Octopath Traveler. So you've got, you know, your little 16-bit looking sprites, but they're in these gorgeous backgrounds that, like, seem photorealistic, you know? Like, it's that style. And I was actually really impressed at how, you know, extremely gorgeous, like, a lot of these stages looked, even though they're very simple linear paths that, you know, they close off and then you have to fight the waves of enemies and then it lets you move on. Like, there's no complexity to the actual moving across the stages. They just look so good. And, you know, music is this really classy kind of electro jazz sort of thing. It's a little bit funky. I really love it. Nice. I found myself quite jamming along to the soundtrack. It's just like I feel like they're sort of underselling themselves just saying it's a game about cubes, because that tells me that I shouldn't be expecting the kind of game that once I got into it, I actually got. Like, it's compelling and gorgeous, but yeah, it's about cubes, but man, they made such a good game about cubes.
So it's a good game?
Yeah, it's an excellent game.
So your thoughts for $20 on this one?
Yeah, $20. This one is worth the plunge. I would love to see this game get more attention. I feel like people who are into, you know, modern storytelling in games, the crowd that, you know, let's say that enjoyed Undertale, which is another funny abstract game that has, you know, elements of shooter action, like this would be probably right up their street. They'll definitely like a lot of the characters in this game because it does reflect that style of humor a little bit. But yeah, I just want to get through this game and, like, you know, just to see all of the things Mustard gets up to. It's an amazing sidekick character. Yes. Oh, also the game has some multiplayer in it, but I didn't try it. But that's another bonus for you.
Multiplayer is always good.
Yeah.
Good stuff. All right, next game to talk about is called Skyscrapers, developed by Ground Shatter, published by Ant Workshop, released October 29th on the Switch for $9.99. Skyscrapers is a classic arcade-style, vertically scrolling, competitive platform fighting game. Select from a diverse range of extreme sports people to fight and race your way to the top of a falling skyscraper as it's being demolished. Chris, tell us about Skyscrapers.
Skyscrapers. Well, for one, they're not all extreme sports people. I mean, one of them's like an assassin. One is a ninja from Dallas, Texas, which I thought was interesting. And one is just a lovely man from England who is kind of my favorite character. There's actually only four characters in this game. So, and one of them is an extreme sports guy. So they're 25% right in that description. maybe 50%. But I just want to say, as an aside, though, the British guy has one of my he has this great line in his intro, and it's when he's challenging the first character, who is the assassin lady from France. She says something about how you won't be so polite after I defeat you, and he goes, "Madam, you have no idea how polite I can be."
Nice.
And indeed, he shows no signs of being a bad sport. In fact, none of these characters even seem to dislike each other. They have to fight on crumbling buildings. So yeah, the game is basically, I mean, I have to come out and say it's basically styled after Super Smash Bros. In a sense. It's basically a stage that, it scrolls as you climb it. You can't stay on the bottom floor because there's too much smoke because the building is burning and falling over. So basically what you're doing is you're jumping up planks and debris and, you know, platforms and walls as they come crumbling down very slowly. And the point of the game is to either get to the top of the building before it's completely wrecked, I guess. Before all the other characters, at the least, it's first person to the top wins. Or if you defeat the other characters, before, you know, anything else. So everybody has a life bar. You have one attack button It's the game is very much one button to jump, one button to attack. There's little else that goes on. So it's basically like timing your jumps to like bounce off debris and things like that. Or you can attack the debris and turn them into projectiles.
Nice.
Yeah. And, you know, the other character is doing the same. There's a special bar that fills up that if it, you know, basically every time you get a, what's kind of considered a bonus, like, so let's say you double jump and ricochet off of a platform and then hit the top platform. Well, that's a bounce bonus, and that will make your special go up a little bit. And when your special bar gets up to the top, then you get to use a super good attack, against the opponent. And, so there's actually two different ways that defeating the opponent, can occur, like two different strategies you can utilize. One is to just keep attacking them, like don't let them progress, just keep bashing them until their life bar goes down, which is basically just a timing thing. Like if you bash them before they bash you, they take damage and you don't. But the risk of that, of course, is that sometimes they could get the upper hand. Then the other one is to just keep jumping and let the ground defeat them. Because if the, if one character goes off screen, basically to the bottom of the screen, then they take damage, but they get sailed up back to the top of the screen. But you keep doing that and they eventually will get defeated. So there's all kinds of stuff that you can do in this game to like try and defeat your opponent, which is really cool. Again, there are four characters, there are four levels. The way a single player game goes is that one player, whomever you choose, has to defeat each of the other characters once. And then you have to defeat each available pairing of the remaining characters. So, you know, you fight two at the same time of the other two characters in each way that can happen. And yeah. Then the final stage is that your one guy has to defeat all three of the other characters.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Which is actually really fun. And that seems to be the whole point of the game, because this game really, really seems to be the type of thing that you would want to play four player couch co-op with, because I really think the strength of this game lies in the multiplayer. Again, because of the whole fact that, you know, they just didn't give you that many characters or that many, you know, the single player campaign is very short. I beat it my first day, in fact, with one of the characters. And, which is cool, because everybody gets an ending, so, and the endings are pretty amusing. The game's pretty funny. One thing I like about it is that if you look at the tutorial, I recommend that you do, it says, your characters are fighting on a crumbling building because video games. So, like, that's an example of the kind of joke you might find in this game. Again, all the characters are, you know, they're in it to win it, but none of them are particularly mean or like mad at each other or anything like that. I feel like the personality of this game really comes out in the people who are on the couch, you know?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, like it really ended up being a pretty tight game. You know, collision detection gets a little bit getting used to, because, you know, as you're scrolling up the screen, a sudden fireball will, you know, do some damage to you that you couldn't have predicted. And yeah. Then sometimes you feel like you should have made that jump, but, you know, like maybe the foot pixel wasn't exactly in the right place on the plank pixel, and then you fall through. But I mean, I managed just fine. And, you know, again, I got through the whole thing on a single player campaign. However, I did notice, again, I think that this game is more tailored to the multiplayer than the single player, because there's no option for difficulty. I looked for one, and because I was like, well, that was actually kind of easy. But I played, you know, a fair bit of Smash Bros. In my time. I've been around the block. But, you know, I still was like, well, let's see if we can ratchet this up a little bit. And sure enough, I'd never found that option.
That's a bummer.
But no, it's fine. It's just, I just found it odd, because usually an action game will have a difficulty setting.
Yeah.
But,
well, as it stands for $10, what do you think of it?
$10, this is a great game to play with some friends, especially as we're all anticipating that next Smash Bros. Game. This will definitely scratch an itch. I think it's definitely interesting enough to play through. you know, I think that $10 is right around the right price for it, because, I mean, anything more and I would have definitely expected more content. As, you know, as it goes, I really love the ideas and I love the strategies that, that it kind of forces you to develop. You know, in the future, if they make another game like this, I would just want more characters and levels. Like, yeah. I think they got the gameplay part down. It's just a little bit minimal on the flavor, if you will.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Overall, great sounds game, pretty good though. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is good. I definitely want to play this with some friends.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. One final game to talk about tonight. That is called Word Puzzles by Paugi, developed and published by Lightwood Games, releasing October 25th on the Switch for $9.99. A bumper collection of six favorite Paugi word puzzles, including Word Maze, Flower, Circles, Crossovers, and more. Paugi puzzles are all expertly handcrafted for your enjoyment and puzzling pleasure. Chris, tell us about word puzzles.
There's that handcrafted thing again. I mean, I guess they would have had to write some of these by hand. I don't know how you develop these kind of puzzles, but...
Magic.
Yeah, so Paugi, or however you pronounce it, they return. I think the last game I talked about was Word Search by Paugi, which I believe we talked about had, like, so many puzzles, which is really great, and word searches are, of course, really fun. Wasn't much else to say about it. There's a lot more to say about this one, because it's basically like six games, because there's just so much, and in six different formats. So I believe you played this one too, right?
Yes.
All right, cool. So maybe we can try and go through the list together.
Let's start with Word Maze.
Yeah, so Word Maze, which seems to be the selling point for this one. That's a really interesting one. So basically, it's like a word search, except that all the letters are used. You just have to find the path by which you can linearly spell like each word that's on the list. And of course, the list is hidden until you hit the hint button, which, you know, bump the shoulders or touch the hint thing on the touchscreen. And it'll tell you at least the list of words that you're supposed to be looking for. And each one are in a theme. But yeah, it's basically just like you trace along the line and try to find all the words. And like I said, every single letter on the puzzle field is used. I like this one quite a bit, but it wasn't my favorite. However, this is the one that I most had to use the hints for once I got to the cakes section. Turns out there's a lot of cakes I've never heard of. But then there's just like animal sounds. And so, you know, you find like moo and then bark and then whinny and meow. And yeah, you just kind of trace along and get through the puzzle. Repeat times 120.
I did enjoy the fact that if you knew some of the words, you could at least work your way through the puzzle, because it's just a process of elimination with the letters.
Yeah, because each one has to be connected to the last one. So you only would have like, you're like, well, this either is going to start with an E or an S. Like, yeah. So
it's basically one giant chain of all the words in a row.
Yeah. But, you know, it was a little bit breezy compared to the rest of them. So at the very least, this is a good one to play if you've not got, you know, all the time in the world to be searching for one word.
Yeah.
Was one word the next one? Is that a good segue?
Sure. We'll go with one word.
Okay.
The word search puzzle where there's only one word to find.
Yes. So in this one, they collected a series of, I suppose, very popular quotes from very, very old people, like 18th century authors and Woody Allen, for whatever reason. And, you know, they're just little tidbits of wisdom. And but they take out all the words. And so you find these words one at a time, kind of a hangman style, you know, complete the sentence sort of thing. So it just tells you how many letters are in the next word, if you don't already know the quote. And then the actual field is the exact letters that it takes to spell that word in every configuration. That is to say, completely scrambled to where there's only one way that you're going to find that actual word. And so you just have to look at the letters that make this word and try and dig up the one, you know, the right configuration. And I hear this one broke your brain a little bit.
Oh, yeah. This one fucked with me big time. Just trying to see an entire grid of letters and trying to find the one word
that
is made of those letters. It broke me. I stared at the puzzle for 10 minutes trying to find one word, and every trick I would normally use in a word search just didn't work because all the letters were the goddamn same.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this one for that reason, actually. I guess I just like to get my brain messed with. Because, it would be like I'd be sitting there staring and staring and staring. And then, like, suddenly the exact correct thing, it's just like a sixth sense would draw me to it and I would just see it. And I'd be like, there it is. And I'd, you know, trace it and get it. And, you know, it's a good thing because I knew almost none of these quotes. Cause I guess these are just, I don't know. I don't do quotes. Mostly quotes are just misquoted. I really wanted them to have a wrong George Carlin quote in there somewhere. That would have been a great in joke.
I don't know if this is the audience for George Carlin quotes.
No, but like George Carlin's official website, whether you like him or don't like him, people have been misquoting him for years and like decades even. And so like he actually addressed on his website before he died that there's an ongoing, a living list of misattributed quotes. Like people trying to say that he said stuff and he's like, no, this is, you know, bullshit. So I would have liked a fake Carlin quote. That would have been nice.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Next game in there is called Mix-Ups, a fiendishly difficult anagram puzzle with three words all jumbled together.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So that one, actually, I think this one was probably the hardest one for me. So
I agree.
It's just all the letters that belong in three words that are linked together somehow, and they're just scrambled into a field. Like, and you just have to find them. Like,
you have to figure out what the three words are, and they don't really give you much in the way of hints.
No, I think the only hints you get in this one are, and there's no penalty, by the way, for using hints to the folks out there. It's just a way to, you know, get unstuck. I think they just give you the first letter of each word. And yeah, it's just like, I don't know what it was about that one, but it's like, I could not, I got about 8 or 9 puzzles in on that one, I think.
Yeah,
like
that versus, was a tough one.
Yeah, I cleared like several dozen on some of the other games. So, I mean, that's cool, though. It gives you something a little harder to chew on.
Yeah.
So
they have flowers, plant pairs of letters around the flower to grow 6 words with a common middle.
Yes, that one is a real interesting one. Although I found it, I played that one for quite a while and never found it to be particularly hard. Because all it is process of elimination.
Mm-hmm.
However, I was still I'm still intrigued that this style of game. Like, I don't think I've ever seen anything like it before. So basically, yeah, they have a flower, and in the middle of the flower are two letters, and then you just choose from a list of other pairings of two letters to find a word that go in front of the two letters in the center and on the other side of the same. Yeah, so it makes a line through the flower, you know, two joined petals. And you just, you know, use up all of the different pairings of letters in order to create a 6-letter word. Like, and all the 6-letter words have the common middle.
Yeah.
And I was like, dang, there's a lot of words that have a common middle. Never even realized.
I enjoyed this game. I thought it was fun. It wasn't too hard and it wasn't too easy. It had a good middle ground. It was good. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. It was definitely like peaceful.
Yeah.
For me. I was just like, this is much better than anagrams.
They had circles, 3 overlapping circles, hide 3 connected words, find the missing letter to unscramble them all.
Oh, wow. So this one was actually ended up being one of my favorites. It was probably the one that took me the longest to figure out. I actually think the very first puzzle on that one just completely stumped me. And then like the next one I got in like 15 seconds. Like that's, that's the weird thing about this particular game. So yeah, this one, deals with like a Venn diagram essentially. So you got 3 circles. And then of course in the middle of those circles is a common center. And sometimes there will be a letter in No, I'm trying to remember now, actually. I might be wrong there. No. It's just the center, which is a question mark, and you have to, you basically pick whichever one word and, you know, unscramble the letters and pick a letter for that middle. And then, if you get that right, then that's established your middle letter, and then that will help you complete the rest of them. And then thankfully they're all in a theme. So, but there was one puzzle, and I hate to give it away, but it's in there somewhere, and it's three countries. And that one took me a very, very long time to get because I couldn't figure out how to spell Luxembourg.
Oh, God, yeah. That I had to Google how to spell it.
Yeah. Which is, it's kind of like the cakes, you know? It's just like, I just didn't know.
Final game in the pack is called Crossovers, crossword puzzles with only one letter missing, which come together to solve a clue. I enjoyed this one a lot as well.
Yeah, this one was really good. Basically, it would cross two letters, like in a crossword puzzle, and the blank letter that's the connecting letter, you just get to choose from four. And the cool thing about this one is that it trips you up, because, like, you know, you might spell shirt, or you might spell short, but, like, the cross letter looks like, you know, it could be also any three out of the four, you know?
Yeah.
Like, because it's one of those things that messes with you, because, you know, there's only one letter that can dramatically change an entire word.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to find the one that satisfies both words, and then you have to unscramble at the end of the puzzle based on, you know, a kind of riddle-style clue. Like, oh my God, my cat is climbing on things and falling. Stupid cat. He's going to be meowing in a second to tell me about it. Anyways.
Guess what I did.
Yeah. So I really enjoyed this one because it plays with your brain in really interesting ways. And it's not entirely too hard. Again, process of elimination type of thing. And then a brief unscrambling thing. But I like stuff like, you know, the clue is like sunblock and the word is eclipse.
Yeah.
So things like that. So yeah, like, six really interesting word games that aren't just a straight up word search, and all of only for $10.
So $10, what do you think of it?
I think you should definitely get it. If you're the type who likes puzzles, this one plays so well in portable mode because it's touchscreen everything. The music, interestingly enough, I think is the exact same soundtrack as Word Search by Pogi. It definitely has the same title song, but
I don't remember.
Yeah, it's quality, but, you know, just more or less generic kind of jazz and blues. And but for that reason, it means that you can play this in like a crowded coffee shop without needing you know, your headphones or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, it's definitely a great, it's like a great game that you could just play over coffee in the morning.
It's relaxing, there's lots to do, and it's just really fun.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
One word aside, which broke me.
Yeah, don't mess with one word unless you got a little bit of time on your hands. That one might...
There'll be some searching.
Might turn into a jawbreaker. But, you know, just an all-day sucker. But yeah, I really enjoyed this, and I am really looking forward to what Pogi comes out with next.
Same here.
I like good puzzle games.
Oh, good stuff. Chris, it is always good having you on. Thanks again to Purnell and to Cole for coming on as well. I'm still pumped that we got to cover Call of Duty on the show. That's a treat for us.
That is awesome. It's moving up in the world.
Yeah, maybe a little. But that is it for this episode. Chris, do you have any final words to end it all? Again, I did that. To end it all. What is wrong with me?
To end it all. Oh,
I'm
God.
So grim lately.
Damn. Well, don't end it all. You got so much more to live for. We got midterms, after all. Get out and vote. There you go.